Happy St. Patrick's Day. How you doing? Welcome to Wednesday's Richie Allen Show, the 17th of March, 2021. I've got two very good guests for you today. Do tweet me, at BBG Richie, if there's something you'd like to contribute. I look forward to reading your tweets today. Let's get on with the programme. Then, as I said, a lot going on this afternoon. Here we go.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yes, indeed. Lord Philip Audrig, son of Eve. Welcome to the programme. To a fault you wrote. To a fault you wrote. To a fault you wrote. There we are. Right. An independent review into historical child sexual abuse in football has found that significant institutional failings meant that the Football Association did not do enough to keep children safe in this country. I'll be joined to discuss that later in the programme by Marilyn Hawes, the founder and CEO of Freedom From Abuse. She's been on the programme before. First of all, though, this hour, Carol Dobson joins me. She's the leader of the Freedom Alliance Party. And the Freedom Alliance Party, which is an anti-lockdown party, will be fielding candidates in the forthcoming UK local elections. Carol Dobson on the programme this hour. Yes. And as I said, if you'd like to join in, you know how to do that. Now, you do it via Twitter. How you doing? March 17th, will you have a drink today? Have you already had a drink today? Why not? Why not? Although, no parades in Bolia O'Haclia. No parades in Port Lauraga. No parades in Kirkig or in Limnock. No pubs open anywhere in God's country either today. Couldn't believe my eyes this morning. Couldn't believe mine eyes. The Mayor of Waterford. Yes, that's my town, where I come from. The Mayor of Waterford City and County was on Sky News this morning. His name is Damien Gagan. I know nothing about him, so I will leave him alone. He's not here to defend himself. But he was on Sky News this morning to talk about virtual parades. Virtual parades are all the rage in lockdown.
And indeed, the very first flying of the tricolour took place in March of 1848 by Thomas Francis Maher when he returned from France. So, you know, Waterford has very much been at the very heart of celebrating St. Patrick's Day, and we've very close ties to the tricolour as well. So look, it means so much to us. St. Patrick's Day is always about celebrating, about putting on the green tie, wearing a bit of shamrock, wearing our badge, going to our parades on our streets and that. But this year it's obviously very, very different. We can't come together and celebrate. We can't hold parades and that, but what I am encouraging people to do is take part in our virtual parade. We're having one locally here in Waterford, and indeed nationally as well. We're having a virtual parade.
How do you have a virtual parade? How do you do that? How do you manufacture a float at home? Virtual parades, I have no idea. Can we bend the rules a little bit, Mr. Mayor, please?
No, I don't think we should bend the rules on this occasion.
Ah, shit.
We've gone through a really difficult period. We've had some really dark days over the winter. And if we just stick together now and hold out for another period of time, you know, there's brighter days ahead.
There's brighter days ahead, be Jesus.
We'll have more fantastic St. Patrick's Days again in the future. And that's what it's all about today. So I would encourage people not to gather in large numbers, not to have house parties.
No house parties now.
Celebrate with your family. Have fun. But
not too much fun.
Bear in mind that there are public restrictions in place. And I think, you know, the sooner that we get out of this, the better. And we will have great days again. It's great St. Patrick's Day. It's great crack again in the future. We'll meet up. We'll have pints again in the future.
And
it will be great.
We'll meet again. Don't know where. Don't know when. We'll have pints again. Hey, we'll have pints again. There are not even 200 people in Irish hospitals with coronavirus. That's the entire country. Not even 200. And not even 60 in intensive care in the entire country. But no St. Paddy's Day today. Ah, well, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Before I forget, let me say hi and hello to old friends of mine, Pat and Peter Martin, who celebrated their 50th anniversary this week. This year, in fact, not this week, let me get that straight. 50 years married this year, but it's Pat Martin's birthday today, St. Paddy's Day. Happy birthday, Pat. Hope all's well with you. And Peter's birthday is on the 20th, so it's at the weekend, or is it next Monday? Is it there or thereabouts? And that's, of course, from Jade Martin. Friends of mine, they've been listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show since the show began. When did it begin? It began in September 2014. That's when the bloody thing began. Bloody well feels like it too. Happy St. Paddy's Day to one and all. Breaking news! Breaking news this afternoon. 25 million adults in the UK have had their vaccine. Hallelujah! 25 million have had their vaccine. Or at least one dose of it anyway. Asher, there's only huge news. Only massive news. Here's Sky News, John Craig. John Craig, I said. Where are you, John? 25 million.
That's what the Department for Health and Social Care has just announced, yes, a short time ago. An incredible achievement, according to the Prime Minister. The numbers are almost half of all UK adults have had the vaccine. 95% of people aged 65 have had their first dose. 9 in 10 of those clinically extremely vulnerable have received the first jab. So the precise number now is 25,273,226. That's the first dose up to the 16th of March. The number who've had their second dose is 1,759,445. And welcoming that 25 million milestone, the Prime Minister said this.
Wait till you hear what the Prime Minister said.
This latest milestone is an incredible achievement, representing 25 million reasons to be confident for the future as we cautiously reopen society.
25 million reasons to be confident for the future as we cautiously reopen society. Is that oxymoronic language or is it just me?
Thank you once again to the brilliant NHS, scientists, armed forces, volunteers, and all those who've helped our rollouts. Well, that news has just come in the last, within the past hour. And earlier, the Prime Minister said that he revealed at Prime Minister's questions that he'd been called up for a jab.
Yes, he's been called up for a jab, as Bojo. We will hear him say that in a minute. What a day to be British on St. Patrick's Day, ironically. We shall jab them in the buttocks, we shall jab them in the arms, we shall jab them in the legs, we shall jab them in the necks. 25 million people, yeah, 25, bente cinco, fair cuig, million people vaccinated in this country. Johnson did say at Prime Minister's questions today that he had been called forth for his jab. He told us that when answering this question from the Tory MP, Steve Brine. Winchester, I think, this guy Brian. Here he is asking Bojo the question, or setting him up for a softball. Here we go. What's happening today with the computers? Here we go.
From gloom to joy, and news from the Winchester for the Prime Minister is that the vaccination programme is going really, really well. There are now less than 200,000 people in the whole of Hampshire in the Isle of Wight left to do in cohorts 1 to 9. We have the plan plus the supply to cover them comfortably by the end of March. So would my right honourable friend please thank the NHS and its volunteers here for this amazing effort? And as he does that, could he share with us his view on what led to the disinformation and apparent abandonment of scientific evidence in certain EU member states around the Oxford-AstraZeneca jab?
Prime Minister.
I thank the NHS in Hampshire and indeed around the country for the amazing job that they're doing in rolling out the vaccination programme. It's been truly stunning, and I think perhaps the best thing I can say about the Oxford-AstraZeneca vaccine programme is that I finally got news that I've got to have my own jab, Mr. Speaker, very, very shortly. I'm pleased to discover. I don't know whether the right honourable gentleman's had his. He's had his. But it will certainly be Oxford AstraZeneca that I will be having.
I don't believe him, but anyway. Doesn't matter what I believe and what I don't believe. Now, the European Commission head, Ursula von der Leyen. or von der Leyen seemingly threatened the UK today in saying that the EU will restrict vaccine exports to countries which are not allowing exports in a reciprocal way. Here she is, Ursula von der Leyen. Schnell!
Open roads run in both directions. And this is why we need to ensure that there is reciprocity and proportionality. And I want to be clear on reciprocity. If the situation does not change, we will have to reflect on how to make exports to vaccine-producing countries dependent on their level of openness. So we are exporting a lot to countries that are themselves producing vaccines, and we think this is an invitation to be open so that we also see exports from those countries coming back to the European Union. And the second point that is of importance for us, we will reflect on whether exports to countries who have higher vaccination rates than us,
yes,
are still proportionate.
Marvellous. Ursula von der Leyen there. Or von der Leyen there. Hi to John Rorty. How you doing, John? Sounds like the Vax Academy Awards, he says. Yes, indeed. Happy Paddy's Day, BBG. Right back at you, John. Many happy returns to you and Steve. Hope you'll have a pint of the black stuff later on, my friend, if you can get any in your neck of the woods. I'm sure you can. Hi to Katrina. How you doing, Katrina? I have seen one or two videos which appear to have been taken in Dublin. And it doesn't look great. Empty streets and a lot of Gardaí. That's on Garda Síochána. It's what we call the police in Ireland. I've had a message from Jane on Twitter. I want to acknowledge it. Jane, I'm really sorry. I genuinely am, even though I don't know you. Jane says, Richie, I lost my mother in the early hours of this morning. And then she goes on to say that the programme is important to her in this pretty crazy, sometimes cruel world. Thanks, Jane. And I'm really sorry to hear that. I hope it comes as some relief, maybe, if your mum was unwell for some time. That's all I can say to you. But good luck with that. Or yeshde gareva onam, as we say back home. Jane, thank you for your message and good luck. Lots to talk about today. I will be joined later on by Marilyn Hawes, who founded, a great lady is Marilyn, founded the Freedom from Abuse group, campaign group. Very interesting report, which was led by Clive Sheldon QC, report into the Football Association's failure to protect children over a number of years. That is hugely interesting. It has implications for lots of things. And Carol Dobson will join me shortly, the leader of the Freedom Alliance. It's a political party which arose, which came into being last year because of lockdown. The party will be fielding candidates in the forthcoming local elections, which of course were suspended last year because of the coronavirus. They were suspended last May. So lots to get into there. Alrighty. Little bit of news. Just a little bit of news on vaccine passports and the European Union. This from the BBC this afternoon. A digital certificate to kickstart foreign travel should be given to citizens across the European Union without discrimination, according to EU officials. The aim, says the BBC, is to enable anyone vaccinated against coronavirus or anyone who has tested negative or recently recovered from it to travel within the European Union. The 27 member states will now decide how to use the new digital certificate. You might want to watch that one because you might fancy a bit of sangria, you might fancy a bit of paella this summer, and you might need to know what you might need to do anyway. European Justice Commissioner Didier Reynders, speaking in Brussels, said the proposed digital certificate would be for all EU citizens, their families, when they're leaving the European Union or living abroad. Right. And interesting this morning, you may have seen this, I don't know, maybe you did, maybe you didn't, but P&O Ferries announced that it wouldn't be taking bookings from people unless those people could show that they had both of their coronavirus jabs. Holidaymakers, planning to have a staycation because P&O Cruises, well, they basically hang around the British Isles. They hang around the UK. They sail up and down the coast of the UK. And their spokesperson said this morning that this is because of a preference being expressed on the part of guests. They are saying that passenger concerns have led them to make this decision. Doesn't sound too appetising to me. Not only do you need to have the two jabs, but you will have to wear masks in certain areas of the ships. Travel insurance is mandatory. Social distancing is in operation. You may only sit at a table with the person or persons that you boarded with. You can't mingle with other guests. And if you sneeze or look a bit unwell, you'll be given a COVID test. If you fail it, you'll be isolated. It doesn't sound marvellous now, does it? Saga Cruises has also said it'll be implementing the same thing. Proof of vaccination. About 2-3 years ago, my friend Hayden Hewitt said to me, when we were discussing the Chinese social credit modelling for monitoring its citizens' behaviour. Back then, Hayden said, social crediting will be driven by the private sector. And when talk of passports, domestic passports to go to the pub or to go to the restaurant, or even travel passports where you might need to have been vaccinated, Hayden Hewitt said back then, this will be driven by the private sector too. And I think he's bang on the money. In fact, didn't Nadeem Zahawi, the so-called vaccine minister, didn't he say as much several months ago? He said, well, whatever the government does, I'm pretty sure, he said, that private businesses will want to be assured that people coming onto their premises are healthy and can demonstrate that they've been vaccinated. Sure, there's only tyranny. Sure, there's only tyranny. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? That's the question. And the campaign group Us For Them claimed last night that it has evidence. The group says, we have evidence that face coverings are already causing demonstrable harm to children. Now, you might know this, you might remember, secondary school students are being advised to wear masks in classrooms. The government suggested that they should wear masks. This is when the government was explaining how the school reopening rollout would occur. The government said, while it isn't the law, it's still strongly recommended that secondary school students wear masks. So the campaign group Us For Them doesn't like this at all, and it launched a symptom tracker last week, a symptom tracker to record incidents of children suffering from wearing the masks. And, well, they've been coming forward in their dozens, have the youngsters. Breathing difficulties, headaches, dizziness, lightheadedness, fatigue, facial rashes, all because they've been asked to wear the masks for 8 hours a day in classrooms. It's only mad, isn't it? Isn't it? And I don't know why any parent, by the way, would ask their child to comply with that and to sit down in a classroom all day long with a mask on his or her face. I know they tend to move around in secondary schools between classes, but still. Franz Hans was in Dublin this afternoon. There were three separate protests organised, Richie, for some reason. Three separate ones. The Gardaí hassled and arrested people going to two of them, alleges Franz Hans one. We ended up in Herbert Park, which is run by Yellow Vests and others. Controlled protests. It was a waste of time going to the Yellow Vest protest, said him. But that's not your real name, so it isn't. I remember you use a different name. That's right. Okay. Keep the tweets coming in at BBG Richie, at BBG Richie on Twitter. Happy St. Patrick's Day to you. If you're just joining the programme, I will be joined by Marilyn Hawes later on. And in a few moments' time, Carol Dobson from the campaign group, which is a political party now, it must be said. That is the Freedom Alliance. Loads to get into with her. And there was one or two other things, but I don't think I have time to get into them. No, I don't. So I'm going to take a tune. Here's the Wolf Tones then.
Law and order on the streets of New York.
The Wolf Tones and Streets of New York on the Richie Allen Radio Show. St. Paddy's Day, Wednesday, March 17th. Hi to Cliff Moore. Happy St. Paddy's Day, Cliff Moore. And to Noel Cox as well. How you doing, Noel? Lovely to hear for you from you, pal. Lots of lovely messages coming in. Hi to Rude Boy Marcus, who's from the Maguire family. He's got an Irish whiskey in hand. Enjoy it, my friend. And it was Bernard, by the way. It was Bernard or Bernard, but I know it's Bernard, who was at the protest in Dublin and came back from it a wee bit disappointed. Thanks, Bernard. Sean McFall says, Richie, I do not believe the government's figures on the vaccine uptake. Today my company emailed me saying that I was to expect it soon in order to travel. I guess that will be the end of my job then. Happy St. Paddy's Day, says Sean. Thank you, Sean. And Spiro Skouras, who's a regular guest on this programme, and a big help to me, sending me nuggets of information from news websites and publications around the world. Great guy Spiro says that it saddens him to think the way things are going, that we might not get to meet face to face one day and have a pint of the black stuff. Yes, let's not hold on to that thought, Spiro. But I hear you, pal. It's occurred to me as well. Happy St. Patrick's Day, Spiro Skouras and his father, Lakey. And my mate Stu and his wife, Kate, neighbours of ours. Happy St. Patrick's Day to you two as well. Right, we better get my first guest on the programme then. Let's do it then. Let's get her on. Now, my great friend Joe Boddington from Chorlton Way said to me some time ago, Richie, you need to get the Freedom Alliance Party on the programme because they will be running candidates in the forthcoming local elections here in the UK. And that is important. Now, the party was formed in response to the lockdown restrictions. Of course, I don't need to tell you about those and what they have meant for us and for our liberties and all the rest of it. And the leader of the party is a lady called Carol Dobson. Carol is a veterinarian, believe it or not. She's based these days in Ayrshire, and let's welcome her to the programme and find out more about the Freedom Alliance. Carol, thank you so much for taking the call. Welcome to the programme.
Thank you very much for having me, and I hope you're enjoying St. Patrick's Day.
Do you know what it is, Carol, now? You know as well as I do. I will in about 90 minutes' time. Then I'll properly enjoy it. I might treat myself to a tipple, but I so far abstain today. It's about the only professionalism I have left in me. I won't have a drink before work. You are very welcome. Thanks. It sounds idyllic, by the way. You live on a converted dairy farm in Ayrshire. I tell you what, Carol, yeah. In these crazy times, there are a lot of people who wouldn't mind trading places with you. It must be beautiful there.
Today it is absolutely gorgeous. The sun is shining. It's very peaceful, and I've got a lovely view of the hills at the back. And this is a thing that's come to me from a long time working towards this. I've always enjoyed nature, and that's one thing that really keeps us grounded and keeps us well. And many people aren't able to enjoy that, and it's been appalling to see how that's been even more taken away from people as a fundamental thing to keep you well and sane and healthy. So absolutely, I value it thoroughly, and I enjoy it every day, even when the wind is raging and the rain is horizontal.
Yeah, I imagine there are times when it isn't great, but still, I'd rather be there getting chucked on by the heavens than be in a built-up area. Carol, tell us about Freedom Alliance and why it's necessary, why the party came to fruition, why it was launched in the first place.
Yes, it was an interesting evolution. I was very troubled by what was happening and started to ask some questions and do some research from a very early stage, and that led me through some of the chat rooms and some of the forums I was looking at to meet with some people who were having gatherings on Glasgow Green in Glasgow, and that's just a traditional meeting place where people would go and speak their truth. And I just met some fabulous people there, and we would exchange our worries and our ideas. And what struck me was how the people who gathered there were very interested in just kindness to humans, looking after children's futures, and they were all coming at that from a great place of human love, if that doesn't sound too cheesy, but a genuine place. And then we were sharing our ideas, and that took form. Then it evolved into bigger meetings that would take place at Holyrood. But I met a few people there who just kind of galvanised my interest in staying connected with the crowd. And then from that, there were some speeches happening at Holyrood In the meantime, we were realising that there was quite a negativity towards the meetings from the authorities, and that it came to pass that you had an understanding that if you want to have your voice heard, then perhaps you have to become political in order just to be safe to speak your truth and make a difference there. And so those ideas were forming. And in the meantime, down south, there were some people who'd got together in the pub initially and then around the kitchen table down in Yorkshire who had also decided, right, guys, this is not going very well. As the summer had prevailed and things had quietened down, it seemed as though we were okay. And then everyone could sense that the trouble was cranking up again come September into October, which it did. So these guys down south were saying, okay, time to form a political party. And it's just really like how things come together when they should, and the different people met up with each other when they should, and we were having some Zoom meetings and so on and forming it. And what has happened is it's been really quite a lot of work. You know, I have this role, which I've kind of fallen into a little bit, was invited to do, but there's so many people, there's initially a handful and now more gathering to do so much work behind the scenes to actually form a proper political party with all the different administrative tasks that that needs and the infrastructure. And there's a lot of work going into it so that we now are enabled to welcome people and direct people to give us the help that they need. And it was only yesterday that we got our actual clarification from the Electoral Commission that we were absolutely good to go. So we've been a wee bit quiet for the last few weeks and people have been asking us, what can we do? And now we're really very free to say, well, come on board and we can really get going with it.
Brilliant.
But it's been a very interesting evolutionary journey for us all, I think. And many people come from perhaps a medical background, a business background, or coming from all different backgrounds and just coming together to say, what can we do? This is just one of the tools to try and make a difference.
I'm absolutely fascinated by the fact that the idea to form a political party came out of the notion that it might be easier to meet and to have these discussions if you were protected by, you know, being a political party. And now Freedom Alliance is an official political party and you will be putting candidates forward for the elections in May, and we'll talk about that in a moment.
Yeah.
And you answered my next question. So it's a broad spectrum of people then, Carol. You said people working in business, finance, banking, doctors, coming together, I suppose, bewildered at what happened last year and the fact that it doesn't look like it's really going to end anytime soon.
I think that all of us have come to this level of concern that's crystallised or clarified in different ways and at different speeds as well. You know, I was very much coming at it from the scientific and clinical background that I couldn't understand why things were being handled the way they were being handled. And then I was meeting people who had been doing different kinds of research and they were saying, well, it's to do with this and to do with that. And I must confess, my own self, I really didn't quite buy into it, thinking, well, it's a wee bit far-fetched, surely not. But as things have evolved, it does seem as though there is just a very strong global agenda driving everything. And I think that's the thing that's disturbed me also, because you could think about maybe a local couple of people in your own government just being a wee bit silly or incompetent, but when it keeps on going and the decisions keep getting made that seems so contrary to what common sense or humanity would decide, then that driving force seems very powerful and very big and very strong and very determined. So I maybe did use the word an easy choice, and maybe easy was a poor choice of words.
No, it's very good. And I want to qualify what I meant when I said it doesn't look like it's going to end anytime soon. They have committed to easing restrictions gradually in the next couple of months. But what I meant by not ending anytime soon is that I personally believe, and I might be wrong because I'm often wrong, but I see this happening again this coming autumn and winter. I really do. I see, you know, the introduction of new, I don't mean the introduction, but the claim of new strains that are more transmissible, meaning that we need to keep the masks and keep the distancing and maybe take more vaccines and maybe go into some lockdowns here and there. That's what I meant by that. Is that something that concerns you, Carol?
Absolutely, absolutely. Because when you actually listen to the words that are used, it's very often terms that are meaning something. They sound like something, but there's a wee meaning, something else that's not quite a promise of something. And so there's all those little, it's little carrots being dangled. It's, I think gaslighting could be a term used, where little carrots are dangled, making people believe that actually it's okay, everything's going to be fine, and that your government does actually love you and they do want to look after you. But then there's just little hints and clues in the speech. The variance is a really interesting one to me, because these so-called variants of concern, they've kind of, we've not been talking about them so much just recently, but they were very important just a few weeks ago. And I thought it was incredible. You know, you've got a variant of concern that's the Brazilian strain, and another one that's South Africa, and these are massive land masses.
Yeah.
And then you've got another one that's just only belonging to Kent. But I was looking at some statistics or some descriptions really that were coming from one of the groups that's a subsidiary of the scientific advisory group, SAGE, and that was describing the, a variant of concern. They called it B117. It could have been Kent or somewhere, I don't know, but they were trying to analyse that statistically with studies, and it, and the conclusion drawn was that this particular variant could perhaps be responsible for an increased rate of death compared with other strains. But then, when I read further into the article, on their own description, they used something called a probability yardstick. And on the probability yardstick, this percentage that they were giving and applying it to this variant of concern was between 40 and 50% likelihood, which means less than likely
less
to cause more problem than not. So I'm not explaining it very well, but the point is that if you've got a 50-50 chance of something, this was less than a 50-50 chance, but by using the words in a certain way, it was able to convey a meaning that it could possibly be still more dangerous. And because these phrases and words are being bandied about quite regularly, without really analysing them, it's very easy for people, ordinary people, to believe a certain message that's being given, and it's quite deceitful.
That's very important, Carol. I remember Patrick Vallance, the chief scientific officer, or the chief scientific advisor, saying that very thing. We're concerned that the Kent variant might be more transmissible and it might lead to more deaths. But in fairness to the Telegraph, the day after that, they reported that somebody from the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine said, well, hang on a second, it's actually somewhere between 30 and 40%, exactly what you said. And that person criticised Vallance for using the terms, you know, we're worried that it could be more transmissible, when there was no real evidence to support that. And as a woman with a scientific background, you know, you're a veterinary surgeon. How do I phrase this? At any time last year, when this all began, did you believe it? When they came out in February and said, or January maybe it was, we're hearing about a virus in China that it might be very, very serious, it might be deadly, and we're concerned about that. And then we moved on a bit, we moved on into March, and the Prime Minister said something about a 3-week shutdown to flatten the curve, we've got to be careful and all of that. At that point, Carol, did you go along with that? Did you think, well, wow, this is deadly, this is serious, maybe lockdown was a good thing? At the beginning, how did you feel about it?
Yes, it was very interesting. So we had quite alarming images on the television. I really have not been watching the normal television for a number of years now because it's just so negative and disturbing, but I catch it from time to time, and I did see these alarming images that seemed to convey that people were literally dropping dead in the street or being taken off to hospital by people wearing the full protective suits. And yet, that did not quite ring true for me with the coronavirus, because there are very few viruses that cause what we would call a peracute syndrome, as in you die so suddenly that you don't even know that you're ill. So literally, you're walking down the street and you don't know you're about to die, and you literally drop dead in the street. And there's one or two things that might cause that to happen. Even someone having a heart attack will think, well, I really don't feel very well, and they might go and sit down on a bench, and then they might really become ill. But there's very few things that will cause you just to literally fall dead. So that did not ring true to me, but it was still very alarming to see, and it's on the news. So you're inclined to think, well, that's really interesting. So then I was questioning that. This is called SARS-CoV-2, so severe acute respiratory syndrome. If you're going to get an acute respiratory syndrome, you're going to have some clinical signs, and therefore you're going to be complaining of being unwell, and then you'll be phoning the doctor or something and talking about that. So that did not ring true to me, the sudden death thing. And also, I know that coronaviruses are very common. Pretty much the mammalian species all have their own versions of coronaviruses and different strains. And so we do study them in veterinary medicine, and cats are the ones who will commonly, that's the conversation will crop up, but other species too, such as pigs and dogs. We know the viruses are present, and we know that they also, different viruses will form different strains and mutate. So to get an unusual mutation that was capable of causing such sudden death and destruction, again, seemed unlikely. When on the day the first lockdown restriction was announced, I honestly couldn't believe my ears. It just did not feel like something that could at all possibly happen in my country, in Scotland or in the UK. That seemed like something that was from countries far away, was entirely different and non-democratic regimes. And I found it very, very alarming. And part of me at the time, I think, was so alarmed, I didn't quite believe what we were being told about the length of time. I was worried about that. I didn't have any basis for worrying about it. I just felt worried that we were changing. Something had changed within the governance of the country that the government considered that to be an appropriate thing to do within this country. And so I was very disturbed. And therefore, as things have panned out, we've seen what's happened since. And if you were to turn back the clock and listen to some of the words that were said and the phrases that were uttered back and listen over to them again, it just conveys a whole new meaning, and you can think, all right, yes, you told us that. Thank you very much. And now we understand what was happening.
I'll never forget when it was announced, when lockdown was announced, an Irish lawyer called Fionnuala Ní Éilean, who works at the United Nations, or at least has done, and is a highly regarded lawyer in America. She's an academic. She was horrified by it, and she was on Sky News with Dermot Murnaghan, and she said to him, this is absolutely astonishing. And she said, we should be very careful about giving this kind of power to our governments. And then she said something amazing, Carol. She said, I wouldn't be surprised, she said, if these rules and restrictions and regulations have been sitting in a drawer for some time now, waiting for the opportunity to come along for governments to use them. And I thought, well, she'll never be on Sky News again. Let me remind our listeners who we've got, who we're listening to. Carol Dobson is the leader of the Freedom Alliance Party, which was formed to provide opposition to the government and state overreach that was facilitated by the coronavirus crisis. If you go to freedomalliance.co.uk, it's an excellent website. It's really user-friendly. You'll see the policies, the policy statements. You'll find out more about the leadership of the party and candidates, because Freedom Alliance will be fielding candidates in the forthcoming local elections, which are, of course, in May. And that's really important. And it's personal on so many levels to you, but you've got youngsters, haven't you, Carol? You've got your own children who've been affected by this, by the huge, I suppose, sea change in their own lives. Tell us about that.
Well, I think there's no one who has been unaffected by it, and we're all just affected in our different ways. My daughter is trying to study down south, and all the university courses have now gone online, and she is just at home again, not able to really enjoy the university experience that she was hoping for and expecting. And she's now sitting at home trying to learn in a different way. Now, you still get to pay your full fees, even though we've opted into online university in some way. And the delivery, you know, the people there, they're doing their best to deliver a different thing, but it's really not the same as joining together in the classroom. And you know, those of us who went to university, it was a whole experience of being at university. Yeah. It wasn't really just about sitting and learning some stuff and learning facts. So that's been quite a difficulty, because it's been a long time coming for her dream to get to university, and now that experience has been somewhat tarnished, with again not very much light at the end of the tunnel for that. It's difficult to see that there's any real a desire to make that go back to normal anytime soon. My son had gone to London to enjoy the London life, and again, the London life is no longer that. And so he's been back and forth a little bit more, and basically trying to do his work hunched over his laptop in a tiny London flat. And again, you enjoy the London life, a tiny London flat, but partly so that you can go out at night. You don't, it's not your intention to stay in your room. And interestingly, for all those people out there who are now working from home and sitting looking at their laptop screens and got sore shoulders and sore necks and so on, I saw a paper that was for the Irish government on the 20th of July last year that absolutely understood that people would get eye strain and dry eyes and sore shoulders and sore necks and headaches through sitting at home. So the overreach of all of it has impacted so many people in so many ways. It's really immeasurable. You also said earlier as well, Richie, there about giving the government, you know, did anyone give government freedom to do this? You know, I don't think we actually did, and I don't think anyone said yes to any of this at any point. So it's been interesting how they've taken something and run with it in such a bold way.
Yeah, statutory
drawers somewhere.
Absolutely, and terms like statutory instruments, you know, exotic terms like statutory instruments, and you have a government now that has the capability to issue a decree, you know, to issue a restriction on whatever, on movement or whatever. And it's basically signed into law, into existence, and later on then it's waived through Westminster by the Labour Party. Has that surprised you in any way, the fact that, you know, Her Majesty's opposition, a party that's supposed to contest what the government of the day is doing, but the Labour Party has... I don't know if I could say that the Labour Party has acted as a cheerleader for the government, because in many instances, the Labour Party seems to have demanded that the government do it harder and faster. They've demanded more restrictions and more lockdowns harder and quicker. Is that something that dismayed you, Carol? Did it surprise you? Did you expect, you know, the Lib Dems, maybe the Greens, maybe Labour would have presented more of an opposition than they have?
I'm not sure that anything other than dismay, there isn't even a word I think that I could use. I think what's interesting is that probably many of us over the years have been generally dismayed that the political system is just, you know, they just seem to get embroiled in kind of tit for tat kind of fights and so on. And it's hard to see that the promises that people make are really delivered with any enthusiasm beyond getting someone elected. And so you start to not see as much of a difference as you should, perhaps, between the different political parties. And certainly this has been, from a Scottish perspective, this absolute awareness that there was no opposition at all to what was going on in the Scottish Parliament. And we had our own tartan version up here of whatever was happening down south. There were plenty of people praising the First Minister and saying what a good job she was doing, because she was just taking what was happening down there and making it even better in some weird way. But there's been no opposition, and in fact a colleague had been trying to make contact. A few people have tried this route to get some answers and get some voice being heard. They've been writing to their MPs and their MSPs trying to get some kind of comeback or feedback or explanation. So this person had tried to contact their MP and their MSP, and the MSP made it crystal clear that no MSP would question the word from the top. So no matter whether they in their heart of hearts disagreed with it, nothing would be said. And so we are here in Scotland, in a country that has no opposition voice to rein any of it in, and that seems to be the case up and down the whole country. It's astonishing.
Up and down the country, yeah. A party like the Labour Party that claims to represent working men and women to go along with measures that I can't estimate, but we know millions of jobs will be gone. There are a lot of people furloughed, Carol, isn't that right, who don't know yet or don't appear to want to know that the job is not really there. It's a ghost job, really, and that when, you know, the money runs out, there won't be any job, and there won't be too many jobs for people to, I don't know, to kind of repatriate to, for want of a better way of putting that, you know, to reskill and go and do other jobs. Carol Dobson is our guest. Do go to freedomalliance.co.uk, brand new political party, and it is a genuine opposition party to the lockdown measures and restrictions. Now, I can only imagine the abuse that the party might get in the near future. All manner of lies will be told about the party and about you. You'll be accused of being anti-vaccine, even though you're not, and even though your colleagues are not. But they'll do that anyway to try and discredit you. I heard Julia Hartley Brewer on Talk Radio speaking with John Lee this morning, and he was expressing his astonishment that, you know, the government is still listening to the SAGE committee. He said the SAGE committee is not fit for purpose. And then later on, I see Lee being described, you know, by everybody and anybody as being anti-vax this and anti-common sense this and in favour of killing people, all of that nonsense. You're not an anti-vaxxer. I shouldn't be telling you what you are and what you're not. You can tell our listeners. But one of the things you don't like, Carol, you don't like the idea that people should be compelled to carry things like vaccine passports in order for them to go and do whatever it is they might want to do. Is that right?
Yes, we've got five key things. I'll just go through them. And it says that we would give, protect and preserve the absolute right of people to leave home whenever they choose, make a living and operate business premises, freely associate, assemble and protest, speak freely without censorship or penalty, and make their own medical choices. So it's just normal stuff that you would expect to be able to do as a normal human living in the planet. Regarding vaccinations and so on, it has to be about proper informed choice, but that does not curtail only to vaccination. If you're having any discussion with any medical practitioner about a medical intervention, it is very reasonable that you should be given enough information that you understand in order to make informed choice and to give your consent from that basis. And I spoke to someone only recently who said that she had gone and had a vaccine done just because it felt easier than trying to kind of argue that she really didn't want it. And there's coercion right there. Imagine having a medical intervention of any kind done just because you think someone else wants you to. If you come along and said you would like me to have a nose ring or perhaps a tattoo somewhere, I'm really sorry, but I think I'd rather say I'll decide for myself. And medical intervention, something that you're actually taking into your body, should be something that would be your choice and given for the right kind of reasons. So definitely give people the information they need. Be truthful about the information that you're giving them and allow people to make an informed choice. That's freedom.
Yeah, because, I mean, I went to Central America in 2002 and I had a good look at the malaria jab, and I spoke to my family doctor about that, a senior lady, and she was like, well, you know, gave me the pros and the cons, and I had the malaria jab anyway, and I went out to Central America. I was out there for a couple of months and I came back no bother. And I wouldn't describe myself as a pro or an anti-vaxxer either. I am a bit concerned about the amount of vaccines being added to the schedule for children and all of that, but that doesn't matter. This one, it seems to me, I understand people being a bit hesitant. Like my friend Hayden Hewitt was very well known for co-founding LiveLeak.com. Hayden is certainly no anti-vaxxer. But he said to me, Richie, if I could get away with it, he said, I'd prefer to watch and see or wait and see with these vaccines because they came into being so quickly and because they were, you know, on the shelf, as it were, with such kind of rapidity. I'm worried about that. And I suppose a lot of people feel the same. Are you saying, Carol, and I don't want to be putting words in your mouth again, that you're not convinced that that it is possible to give proper informed consent about these vaccines only because they are so new, they are so recent? Is that what you're saying?
I think the informed consent is broader reaching than that. When you chose to go to South America, you could have chosen to not have the malaria treatment and just been very careful about not being bitten by mosquitoes.
Yeah.
Because if you don't get bitten by a malarial mosquito, then you don't get malaria either. Or if you do get it, you may get it severely or you may not. And so there's levels of choice there within that choice. So with regard to this virus, you are wanting to know what is my chance of catching the disease, how ill will I become, how much protection will the vaccine give me, will the vaccine give me any kind of reaction, what kind of health status am I in that puts me in a greater or lesser risk category. And what really is the vaccine doing for me? Is it going to stop me from getting infection? These are these phrases that seem to be still, people are told they still should be so isolating and masking themselves and distancing themselves even after they've had
even
the
after.
Infection. And so you're really questioning how valuable it is. I think from an integrity perspective, you'd really want to be saying, I'm offering this well-produced medical intervention that with confidence I know you will benefit from in a clear way. And I think that still currently is very far from being clear.
Fair enough. And I wouldn't be doing my job if I didn't ask you this. Whether you answer or not now is up to you. Are you planning to have it?
I am not planning to have it. I'm a healthy person and I am not at all worried about the virus. I think I may even had it mildly last February. I was down at a conference in London and had a sore throat for 2 days. I find a really interesting talk actually about the immune system. So we were taught about the innate and adaptive immune systems when we were at university, but it was all quite difficult to sort of take it all in. And I found this fantastic talk that really explained very well about the innate and adaptive immune systems and your T cells and your killer cells and all this kind of thing. And I was thinking, that's fantastic. I wish I had known that 40 years ago.
Yeah.
But I am very comfortable and confident that I'm not at risk from becoming even mildly or moderately ill from this. I think maybe very mild if I get exposed to the virus again, perhaps, if the different variants are to be believed. There were some things going on through social media that I saw challenging those of us who are against the restrictions to go and work in the so-called COVID ward without any protective equipment and just, you know, because we didn't believe in it and off we should go. And that's not what people necessarily believe or don't believe.
Yeah,
I'm thinking,
yeah.
I'd really be quite happy to go and help out in the COVID ward, and I think I would not be worried about it at all. But I don't think that anyone would be willing to take up that challenge. So
no. There
I put it out now. Maybe someone will come forward and say, okay, on you come then, off you go and do a shift of five, and I'll have to enter the lion's den. But no, I feel very confident that if people are able to be given enough information about good healthcare choices, and again, a great deal more could be done regarding that for day-to-day health for people, then the worry becomes markedly reduced from what it is right now.
Well said. It's the reason I won't have the vaccine, and I've made it clear on the programme. It's by the government's own numbers, the virus isn't really deadly. It's wrong to call it deadly. Obviously, any illness is, and I say obviously as a lay person, but any illness is a problem for somebody with the so-called comorbidities. And if you're a very senior man or woman, that's not that we, you know, that we don't care about older men and women. But I think the government demonstrated last year that it didn't care too much about senior citizens living in care homes. But that's another story. Carol Dobson is our guest. We'll move away from vaccines. It's important to say that the Freedom Alliance, as Carol has just brilliantly articulated there, you know, believes in the right of leaving your own home, believes in the right of assembly, the right to free speech, the right to protest, but also the right to open your business and to trade and to, you know, to go about your business as you always did. That's what the Freedom Alliance was formed for. It's a brand new political party. freedomalliance.co.uk is the website address. Where do you think, because I get such a large correspondence to the programme, and a lot of people at the moment, I suppose after 12 months of it, they're run down, Carol. They're fed up. They're upset. They're maybe a bit depressed. And they can't see a light at the end of the tunnel. You know, they don't see an end to this. You know, if the government says, well, you can't go to the supermarket or you can't go to the cinema or the pub unless you can show that you've been vaccinated or passed the coronavirus test. A lot of my listeners think, well, Richie, this is not going to end, and you know, this is the beginning of it and all that. Give them some optimism, Carol. I know that freedomalliance.co.uk is getting a lot of hits. A lot of people are checking you out. Are you confident that there's a way out of this for people? We've not gone too far, maybe. That's what I'm trying to say.
So the key thing here is for the collective humanity to understand, I think, really, what humanity is all about. And way early on, way back, I read a an essay from a philosopher guy, and he was talking in terms of he had had this feeling that some kind of big change was on the horizon, and, you know, it's kind of hit us all like a ton of bricks, but here we are, like it or not, massive changes have happened within the whole global society, and here is the chance for us to reset in some way. And the resetting of that then is up to us about which vision do we have. Do we have the vision of where it's heading now with surveillance and control and testing and restriction and fear and distrust? Or do we as humans collectively come together and say, actually, no, that's not what we're going to do. That's not how it's going to look. And we're going to shape it in a particular way. So the confidence, I think, will come from how many people are out there understanding that they've had these changes enforced upon them, understanding that they feel very uncomfortable about that, and now being given different ways and different tools, as I've said already, of which Freedom Alliance is only one of those tools, to say, enough is enough. We don't like this. We are humans. We want to enjoy each other's company, connectivity, connection, humanity, understanding. Anyone who is not with us and being anti-lockdown, therefore, is pro-lockdown. And I would ask you, if you're pro-lockdown, what is it that you like? Do you like the way we're looking after old people and locking them away and covering things in plastic? Do we like it the way we're looking at children and causing them to cover their faces and keep them apart from each other? And or do we like that we're closing small businesses down? Do we like it that funerals and weddings have been so changed that we're not allowed to go to church or sing and dance and have parties anymore? So therefore, because I think anybody with any humanity would say, absolutely not, that's not how it's going to go, in the end, I think we will all come together and say, we will make the changes, but we're going to make the changes in a more beautiful way. In this essay, the chap was saying, if you would cause restrictions for a few weeks to save, say, 1 million lives, then people would make that sacrifice. But if you're talking about restrictions going on for years and years to save, and saving lives isn't really the key thing either. It's about the quality of life for everyone. It's what kind of life you want people to have, what kind of life you'd want to see. We are able to make sensible decisions about that. The people who are living in fear maybe don't see it that way still, but those other people who are listening to your show and who are coming to find out about Freedom Alliance absolutely understand that as a collective, we are so creative. So many people have spent so many hours in their offices and in their home offices over this last year working on ways to make different restrictions happen, and whether 2 meters is the right measurement, and where the sticker should go on the floor, and what the sticker should look like, and all this kind of thing has been discussed. All that human creativity could then rather focus in a more positive way. We are very creative and expansive beings, and we're very capable of making better things happen. We all know how to do it. We just have to say we are going to do it.
I've really enjoyed speaking with you, Carol. Can you tell us before we move on, how many candidates do you think you might be able to field come May time?
So, and we're focusing, at the moment on the Scottish elections, because that's the Scottish Parliament elections, and we're filling the what's called the regional lists right now, and we've got enough to fill the regional lists right now, and recruiting as we speak. There are people coming forward as we speak, and then a few constituency lists as well in Scotland, and the same thing will be happening in Wales, and then there's local elections. More the focus for me has definitely been the Scottish elections, but we're absolutely filling up the list as we go along, so you'll certainly be able to see plenty of Freedom Alliance candidates in your local area once it comes to May, because we're not done yet. And that was partly restricted because we really weren't able to fly until we heard the good news yesterday that we were able to get going with it and fly. So come forward. Door's still open, and we are recruiting still as we speak whilst we're filling up our slots as we speak also.
Brilliant. I mean, speaking of the parliamentary fielding candidates in Scotland, you're the only opposition in Scotland now. I mean, as brand shining new as you are, and a lot of Scottish people who might hear this programme or catch it later on might be thrilled to hear that they've got that opportunity. There isn't another party in Scotland that is saying, as you are saying, that this is an insane way to live and to operate a society. We need to stop it. So you're the only alternative, Carol.
Yes, and I think, you know, we will hold our hands up and say we're just ordinary people who have come from different walks of life and different businesses to try and come together to say, guys, we need to do things differently, and how can we? And this is one way. And we would definitely not hold ourselves up to be politically astute or experts in any way. But here's the other thing as well. We don't have to know all the answers. People can help us with the answers. We are, as I've said already, very creative and very helpful. We can work together. So we come forward, let people express their humanity, let people express their opposition to what's been done to them over this last 12 months through the Freedom Alliance, and then going forward, bring a better way of doing things than we've had to suffer this whole time, and get the joy back into people's
back into
lives
life,
again.
Yeah. Look, I meant it when I said I really enjoyed speaking with you. Thanks for taking the time out to join the programme today, and good luck in the coming weeks. I mean that sincerely. Thanks, Carol.
Thank you very much.
Lovely to have you on. Carol Dobson there. Let me give you the website address again. It's freedomalliance.co.uk. freedomalliance.co.uk. It's a really nicely put together website. You'll find links there to become a member. I think it's £19 per year to be a member of the party if you want to get involved. There is information there about the candidates, about the leadership, and importantly, the policies which have been outlined by Carol Dobson, the leader of the party, in the last half an hour or thereabouts. Thanks to her. Right, okay. It is exactly 5. Well, it's not. It's 4 minutes past 6. You're with the Richie Allen Radio Show. It's me, the BBG, live from Salford. Wednesday's programme, St. Patrick's Day. Thanks so much to you for your St. Patrick's Day messages. I really appreciate them. Let me read one or two tweets now before I move on. So many of them coming in. I was right on a tweet, and then it just it scrolls right up. Hi to Patricia in Switzerland, long time listener, good friend of ours. Happy St. Patrick's Day, Patricia. Emma says, this is Emma Al-Sassini. How you doing, Emma? Richie, I actually feel like we're living in some creepy episode of Tales of the Unexpected, says Emma. It does feel like that, Emma. It does feel it. Tales of the Unexpected. I can see the opening credits now in my mind. Thanks for that. The government says Patricia, the government says, what about all of us? Tell the government to F off. We outnumber them. We have the power. We just have to find our voice and to speak it, says Patricia. Is that too radical? But we've been divided, haven't we? Identity politics. Identity politics, identity politics. We've been divided. Hi to Chris Morell. How you doing, Chris? There's no need for a vaccine, says Chris. So it cannot or should not be used as a means to the control grid, says Chris. Thank you, Chris. Right. William says the same. It's not even a vaccine, is it? Also, all of this depends upon the germ theory. That's William's opinion. It is time for another tune. It isn't traditional Irish music. It's not traditional at all, but it's Irish, I suppose. It's a pre-Bill Clinton, pre-Bill Gates U2 on St. Paddy's Day, March 17th. No pubs open in Salford. No late night drinks for the BBG, sadly. This is U2 from the Joshua Tree. I still haven't found what I'm looking for. Marilyn Hawes is next. Still haven't found what I'm looking for. The Richie Allen Radio Show. 9.5 minutes past 6 o'clock, Wednesday's programme, St. Patrick's Day. Let's move on. This is very serious, very important. Is this, you must have come across this on UK television and radio news today. An independent review into historical child sexual abuse in football has found that significant institutional failings meant that the Football Association did not do enough to keep children safe. Now, the report focused on the abuse of children between 1970 and 2005 and was led by Clive Sheldon, QC. The report said that the Football Association acted far too slowly to introduce appropriate and sufficient child protection measures and to ensure that safeguarding was taken sufficiently seriously by those involved in the game. These are significant institutional failings for which there is no excuse. The findings of Clive Sheldon QC. This is important. Let's welcome back to the programme the founder and CEO of Freedom From Abuse. You'll find it at freedom-abuse.org. Pleasure to welcome back Marilyn Hawes to the programme. Marilyn, thanks for your time today. How are you?
Thanks for inviting me.
Anytime.
Happy St. Patrick's Day.
Oh, thanks very much, and many happy returns. Was anything in the report today, did any of it come as any type of surprise to you?
None at all. And I think it will be worse. It will be worse than what's actually written. It is utterly appalling. I mean, you knew because I've had a lot to do, you know, when this first came out about 4 or 5 years ago with Andy Woodward and Steve Walters and Gary Cliff. I was quite involved at that time. And, you know, their pain and their anguish and their heart. I mean, to see grown men at their ages sit in front and cry was just heart-wrenching. And it just is awful. I mean, you do not expect this to happen when you take your child to football, grassroots football. And I'm pleased to see, I've just seen on the news tonight, that the new chair of the FA looks like he may be facing, as one of his first appointments, whoever he may be, potentially there could be a select committee, a parliamentary inquiry into this damning report. I mean, it is utterly awful. But, you know, 60% is never reported. So, you know, here we have on one of the bullet points here that I've got, there were known to be, listen to this, at least 240 suspects and 692 survivors. Yet relatively few people actually reported it. And the real level is likely to be higher. The real level of this will be higher. I mean, it'll be more than 692 because, as I say, 60% is never reported. There'll be grown men who just sat and suffered it and don't want to get their name out there. And all courage to those that have and actually brought this. And of course, it started with Andy Woodward. Well done him.
Well done him, yeah.
It's awful. And I have to say as well, if the FA believes that this won't ever happen again, it's naive and it's dangerous.
Now, on that, Marilyn, on that,
and then they don't understand the complexity of grooming.
On that point, one of the things that Sheldon said that he didn't have any evidence for, he said he didn't have any evidence that a paedophile ring was operating. Now, you said there that the number of victims is likely to be far higher, as is the number of perpetrators. Do you accept that there isn't enough evidence to suggest that a paedophile ring was operating?
I haven't seen the 700 pages. Yeah. I haven't had privy to that, but I find it really difficult to believe that people didn't know. It was clearly obvious that people in these, you know, and so there's first, where's it gone now? I read about, where does it say here? Oh, an external review. Here we go. The Eddie Heath abuser. An external review said some adults at Chelsea must have been aware of Eddie Heath's abuse and turned a blind eye. Bob Higgins, another one that was up for grabs today in Southampton, came out and said, also Peterborough Youth Club. Don't forget, they move on. Kit Carson, you see here, Eddie Heath was at, where was he at? He was at Peterborough. Kit Carson was at Peterborough, Cambridge and Norwich. Bob Higgins, sorry, he was in Southampton and Peterborough. I find it really hard to believe that there wasn't some knowledge. You know, what are they going to do? They're not going to put on a pin board, are they? Oh,
no.
We've got a paedophile ring going on here. I mean, not,
Marilyn, do you have any idea?
They go undercover. That's how they work.
But do you have any... This is what I can't get my head round. Watching Sky News this afternoon, the terms like kiddie fiddler were being bandied around. In other words, men who, as you've just described, men who did not commit these crimes against boys seemingly knew that they were going on and would use terms like kiddie fiddler to describe Barry Bennell. Have you any earthly idea why a man or a woman would know or suspect that somebody was abusing a child but wouldn't say anything? Why is that?
Well, they don't want to get their hands dirty a lot of the time, you see. They don't know where to go with it. I think when this, to be fair, when this was going on with Barry Bunnell, people, you know, I know from my teaching career, it wasn't. There are processes and procedures in place where you have to go and report, or you should. We need mandatory reporting, Richie. That's what we need. Where, I mean, I've been pushing for it. It absolutely is needed. At mandate now, follow them. You know, there is no legal requirement in this country, and we are unusual because a lot of countries have it, but not us. There is no legal requirement to report child abuse. So there's statutory guidance, but statutory guidance is only a hope and a moral duty. It's not a legal duty. So say I came to you now, say you were the manager of Timbuktu Football Club, yeah? And I'm a welfare officer, and I say, oh, dear, I've just got this referral. So I go to you, and I say, oh, Mr. Allen, we've got this referral of abuse. If we had mandatory reporting, and you didn't report that, it's illegal. It would be illegal. You would be in court. And that's what needs to happen.
You've stunned me now there, Marilyn. You've stunned me. Hang on. You've stunned me. The guy who said that Bennell or Ormond or Eddie Heath was a kiddie fiddler. Surely to Jesus, excuse the blasphemy, that guy must be an accessory after the fact. If you know that a child is being abused and you refer to a guy as a kiddie fiddler, but you don't do anything about it. It's a terrible... And you don't do anything about that. I would have imagined that legally you're in very, very hot water because you could become an accessory after the fact because you didn't do anything.
I think you are an accessory. You've allowed it to continue. Yeah. I've always said that. I say this on my training programs. If you are not going to do anything about it, okay, all the teachers, all these places, sports clubs, everywhere that deals with children has statutory guidance to report. That is basically no more than saying, I hope your conscience allows you to come forward because that's what we expect. Well, what they don't understand is these people who are grooming manipulate you to stay shut up. Well, this is, I would like to know, and I haven't seen it, and I think it should be transparent, what exactly are the FA going to do regarding safeguarding measures? I mean, it took them 5 years to get a comprehensive child protection plan in place from 1995 to the year 2000, 5 year delay. Where was the urgency? And where, you know, he says in the children report here, 13 safeguarding recommendations, yeah? Understanding and acknowledging the appalling abuse suffered by young players in this period covered in by the review is important for its own sake. What are those 13 safeguarding recommendations? And do we know and do we have any confidence? I mean, I put something out on LinkedIn today and it was really, it made me smile actually, because as soon as I put it out, the Sheldon Review will be due out at 1 o'clock. I did ITV this morning, blah, 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 and I said, you know, it is naive and dangerous if they believe this will never happen again, because such is the nature of these predators. The more blocks you put up, the more they find it fascinating and challenging. They like it because they're arrogant and they think, well, if I can get around that, that'll be quite funny. But, you know, I had a bounce back from somebody who works at Norwich Football Club. Oh, we have been working tirelessly. Da-di-da-di-da. I went, oh, poor you. You're working tirelessly. What exactly have you put in place? So I have asked for a phone call because I want to know, because Norwich is written down here, I want to know exactly, as one of these clubs, what are they doing? If they are going to go for nothing more than an online tick box safeguarding course, it ain't going to work. Because you have to understand how these, you have to experience it, you see. This is, I mean, you know, Richie, that my I had 17 years. My best friend, I did not know he was a paedophile. He was also my boss for 10 years. He sexually abused and groomed my children, three boys, and you know, groomed me. I'm an intelligent woman. I'm a trained teacher. I was deputy head. He was the head teacher. I had a diddly squat clue what he was doing. So it's, it isn't just a tick box. It's something you have to feel. So you're watching a relationship pan out where this weird relationship between an adult, or not even an adult, because these teenagers start. When I have gone into prisons and I've spoken to offenders, I ask them straight, when did you start? When did you start being attracted? I can't stand the word kiddie fiddle. I think it's offensive.
We won't use it again.
And they'll say, when I was 10 or 11. So in the same way that I know I'm heterosexual, somebody else knows they're homosexual, somebody else knows they're transgender, they know as well they're attracted to children. So fast forward, that begins at year six in primary school. They don't just stop and go, I'll get through puberty, then I'll start.
We shouldn't conflate homosexuality with child abuse now, so we shouldn't.
Peer-on-peer abuse.
Yeah, we shouldn't.
So what about in these young academies where the academy football academies are?
Yeah.
Will they be watching? Is there going to be a flag raised on the fact that these child abusers do start in their early teenage years?
Yeah.
If I wake up one day at 21 and go on board now, maybe I'll do this.
Right, this is interesting. Let's stay with this. First of all, that we shouldn't conflate pedophilia, and you're right, we shouldn't use kiddie, we won't use that term again. We shouldn't conflate pedophilia with homosexuality.
No, this would be awful. Do you know what? Somebody wrote to me the other day and said something about a homosexual paedophile. Do not say that. Do not go there. Absolutely wrong. It's completely separate. Absolutely. I have two. I have two homosexual stepchildren, a girl and a boy. They, you know, and I'm horrified to think that people would think that.
No, well done. Well said. Marilyn, hang on. It's 21 minutes, 22 minutes past six. We're going to go to 5 to 7. There's loads to get through. There's loads I want to ask you. But time is going to fly by. You're stunning me now by telling me that meeting offenders, they concede to you that they took an interest in very young children when they themselves were 11, 12, 13.
Yes.
That's absolutely stunning me, that is. But we'll come back to that maybe in a few moments. Football associations and clubs and girl guides and boy scouts. Listen, when I was 17, 18, I was a manager of an under 10s and an under 11s and an under 12s football team. You know the way it used to be. People would volunteer to do that. I had no skill to do that, number one, but I also didn't. Back then, and this was in the mid-90s, I didn't have to prove that I was safe. You know, the police didn't have to do a background check on me.
No, you didn't have they were then called CRB checks, criminal record checks. Now they're called DBS,
None of that.
And barring service checks.
And do you know what was amazing to me? I was very savvy at that age because I was getting into the media, I was getting into journalism. And I was also very aware of child abuse in the Catholic Church in Ireland. So I was very savvy and I protected myself. I used to insist that some of the parents would stay back to watch training on Fridays and to come to the games at the weekends. I would never allow myself be in a situation where I was on my own with 15 or 20 young boys because I was aware of what was going on even then. And some of the parents used to grumble and I used to say, well, listen, there's no training. If you don't stay around, two or three of you, particularly women, stay around and keep an eye on the dressing rooms while the youngsters are getting changed and all of that. But it was all very lackadaisical. I understood, and you're telling me now that I'm a dreamer, I understood that things had changed dramatically since then, and that I understood that it's next, I would have thought until, you know, meeting you over the last couple of years, I would have thought that it was next to impossible for a predator these days to get access to young children at a club or a society. But you're going to tell me I'm totally naive.
Well, because let me give you an example of how bad our conviction rate is, OK? So there's a police force I speak to down on the South Coast who said to me several months ago, for example, and I feel sorry for the officers, that we say we've got 1,000 cases that we've looked at and investigated thoroughly over 2 years. All those 1,000 cases, we believe as police that they are guilty, right? So then goes off to the Crown Prosecution, and this is where the problem sits. Crown Prosecution are looking for beyond reasonable doubt. There can be no other reason why this person has behaved like this with this child. No other reason at all, right? So that is difficult because if it's historic, and historic abuse is anything over a year, it doesn't have to be 20 years, it's anything over a year, because there's no forensics. So this is what takes the time. They have to try and find other people who this victim didn't know that tells a similar sort of story and build the case. So of that 1,000, only 30 will pass through the filter of Crown prosecution. So 970 go on a walkabout. Bye-bye. So then we got another problem. 30 go into court by trial, and only 3 approximately will get convicted. So off go another 27. So now you've got 997 people wandering around who the police have thoroughly investigated. They thoroughly believe are guilty, walking free. And, you know, you're only going to get a dodgy DBS, Disclosure Barring Service check, if you've been convicted.
Yeah.
And then, of course, 60% is never reported. I'm going to shock you even more. There's a great guy, Dr. Graham Hill, who is a global respected criminologist on this very subject. Yeah. And I said from 20 years ago when I started doing this, I kept saying to people, you are naive if you believe you don't know a child abuser. And then many years later, I went on one of his courses. He said exactly that.
No way.
They has one in every single street. And the trouble is now as well is online abuse. If people are doing it online, it's fused in now with offline. So, you know, it used to be like, oh, 1 in 3 people doing it online would doing it offline. But now it's fused together in the last 2 or 3 years.
One on every street. Hang on. One on every street. That's going to terrify people. You're saying...
Then they need to learn. They need to learn what to stop then, don't they? This is a pandemic in its own right, Richie, for which billions of pounds have not been spent on a vaccine. This is a global problem. It's the same across the world. If I told you now that during lockdown, 33% more reports and increase from children reporting sexual abuse between April and June. Family abuse.
By your family member.
Familiar abuse. 33% increase of children reporting to the police. You know, 200 children a day during lockdown were reporting sexual abuse to police.
If you're right now, hang on. And I'm going to say that I don't doubt you because you've been doing this for years. So if you're right, I remember about 2 years ago, I interviewed one of the better known paedophile hunting groups, which do the Facebook stuff, catching paedophiles.
Yes.
And I liked them. I gave them a bit of stick. We had a good back and forth about whether they should be doing it, whether vigilantism is any good. But I liked them. Do you know what he said to me, Marilyn? He said, Richie, we go finding these people online by pretending to be children, effectively.
Yeah,
and he said to me, Richie, within setting up a profile and going online, within seconds, they're coming from all over the place. So here's the question then. You've been campaigning against to raise awareness that pedophilia is far more common than people understand. You've been doing this for years. Your own experience is, God love your children, terrible. So why? If there are 100,000 or 500,000 or 1 million people in the country who fantasize about raping children, why? Where's that coming from? What's happening to people?
You see, we're going into neuroscience here now. No, nobody is born to abuse, not anybody. Something happens in their childhood, in those very early years, that causes trauma. Now, 1 in 8 people who are child abusers, only 1 in 8 were sexually abused. The other 7 out of 8 had other forms of adverse childhood experiences. It's called ACEs, adverse childhood experiences. And what happens in those very early years, so your brain is developing until you're 25, and trauma, and bearing in mind we're all unique, we're all different, we've all got different sensitivities, so I could be smacked in the face, it wouldn't bother me, you could be, and you might fall over, and it would really impact you. We don't know what the harm is to each individual person, because we're unique. So in that trauma, we have a chemical called cortisol, which actually also levels down our blood pressure. It is very, actually quite dangerous for the young developing brain, because cortisol spikes and it breaks the neural pathways in the brain. It eats away at the healthy brain cells. That then changes the landscape of the brain. So what might be, I usually demonstrate this on a ball of Play-Doh. What is a nice little round ball is then dented and got divots and lumps on it, and that will come out as behaviors. Now, that brain just stays cemented like that with unusual behaviours, overly sexualised behaviours, maybe when you're 10 or 11. You see, this is where it comes to the child abusers in prison who say, I was doing it at 10 or 11.
Yeah.
Their negative behaviours were not addressed at a very young age. And therefore, they have a skewed moral code. They have distorted thinking. They don't think in the same rationale as you and I do. They don't even think about risk until after they've done it. They are so driven to do this.
It sounds like
And that's why we have got to get in to right down to the roots of this problem and get into these early years. Train the parents about if you're going to swear at your kids, if you're going to go around doing all sorts of horrible type of stuff with them, you are setting this child up for something not so great. There's a very, very good, 80% of young offenders, you know, had adverse childhood experiences. And there's a very good thing called Step Inside the Circle. I recommend everybody watches it. Go on YouTube, find it. It's a project that's gone on in America with a prison. And they have all the prisoners around in a big circle. And right in the middle is this lady saying, step inside the circle, one step. If you were physically abused as a child, step inside the circle. If you were verbally abused, step inside the circle. If you were neglected, step inside the circle. If you were sexually abused, every one of those guys stepped.
Everybody
right
stepped
into
in.
The center of the
this
circle.
Is controversial, though, Marilyn. Marilyn, let me
that
remind.
Is heartbreaking, and it's so they are also victims. So do you know what? When people tell me about somebody who's abused them, because, you know, 60% is in the family, it was granddad or it was auntie, because don't forget, we have women paedophiles.
Yeah, yeah.
Or tell me about their childhood. And within 2 minutes, I know, right, so there was trauma, unresolved trauma. And that unresolved trauma has, for some people, not all, of course not all, but for some, it causes this distorted
Yeah, but for some now, this
so
is the
harmful.
Thing. This is the thing. Let me remind our listeners. Marilyn Hawes, the founder and CEO of Freedom From Abuse. That's freedom-abuse.org. You'll see and hear Marilyn regularly on UK television and radio campaigning to raise awareness of the existence of paedophiles and how paedophiles operate in the UK today. Her own experience is devastating. Go to the website and find out more about Marilyn. Now, this is controversial. I understand, I'm not dismissing this now at all. I understand where you're coming from. And before you jump in, let me finish. I know you're going to jump all over this. as a lad who grew up on a council estate in Waterford, a place called Ballybeg, and very proud of it I am too, working class place, most of most of the kids I grew up with, we had hard upbringings. I was violently abused, not sexually, but I was beaten, the living daylights beaten out of me morning, noon and night by my father. Everybody I grew up with had it. We had parents who had, you know, to say they had a sharp tongue would be an understatement. That sort of upbringing, you know, I can't. I can understand where you're coming from, and you're far more researched into this than me, but none of them, and I know these people well, none of us ever grew up with an impure thought about a child in our minds.
No, absolutely. And as I say, it would be wrong for people to think that, you know, it just is for some people, in the same way that held in trauma. So, like you say you're physically abused, blah, 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 and it's horrible. And with that verbal abuse, blah, blah, blah. And it's horrible. But for people that don't talk about it, as you have done so openly, for people that don't, and they don't lay down that trauma, the impact on life-threatening illnesses is massive. Diabetes, heart disease, high blood pressure, cancers, all created from held-in trauma. It is really devastating. And, you know, to sort of spit it out there. Also, people have varying sensitivities. That's the point. You see, some people are more resilient. They bounce through things. I always say I'm a bit made of rubber. I was devastated when this happened to my children. I was ill for 3 or 4 years. But, you know, I'm not going to make myself a prisoner of this person who wronged my life so much. I'm not going to do that. I am going to fight back. You got two chances. You got two choices. You either sink down a dark hole or you bounce back up. And, you know, I was determined I was not going to succumb to this man's, I mean, everything in my life just devastated it. Everything I stood for, it just literally pulled the rug from under me and a tsunami came through my life. But, you know, I'm not going to give any credence to that. You know, I read a lovely thing the other day that somebody, it was a Muslim lady, said to me, and it was a lovely, out of pain comes our greatest calling. And I can honestly say, Richie, this for me is a calling. Yeah. I mean, I was brought up a Catholic as well. That's another conversation, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I do believe that the awful thing that happened to my life has helped so many people. At the moment, I'm mentoring a family in Seattle. We've got two girls now working for us in Pakistan. We're writing courses all the time. You know, we're not the NSPCC. We don't get fat checks from the government. I won't get funded by the government. I've got too much of a gob on me because I don't have any time for politicians.
That's true.
You know, we've got a conference tomorrow, Richie, for young people, do you know? We've got young people actually speaking, and I want to capture all the different statements that youth punk people make. We've got over 400 people coming to say online what they think of their world today, because, you know, there's too many people in Westminster making knee-jerk decisions for something that's going to impact these youngsters' lives, and no one asks them, and they're perfectly articulate. No, and we got one girl who had hideous racial abuse in a school only 5 years ago. We've got another girl who's coming, training to be a lawyer now, who had hideous abuse in children's home. You know, she's only 21. So it's right in your face. And the thing with the FA is these people are so clever. They will scram around people. They become the best coach, revered. Nobody wants to lose them. They silence people. They have people on their team, so they're not going to sort of like whistleblow on them. And there are threats to stay silent. And or you won't, you know, if you say anything to me, you're not going to get play. You're not going to be in the A team playing football on Saturday. I'm not so sure that the FA understand the real sinister, clever depth of manipulation in your face.
What can they do, Marilyn?
People knew that Barry Bunnell was having all these lads round at weekends. Who on earth thought that was a good idea?
Yeah,
This
is the thing. I've asked myself this question 1,000 times. Growing up in Ireland, and a very good friend of mine was abused by a bishop. It was a very famous story. And, you know, this guy would do the same thing. He would have boys around. It made no sense that he had boys around. And yet people didn't do anything. I mean, it was like me going to school when I was in primary school. I would turn up to school, you know, when I was 6 or 7, 8 years of age. Sometimes I would have bruises. You know, it was obvious that somebody had given me a kick in, but nobody said anything. And I've always wondered why, you know, why. But anyway.
I mean, people don't want to, you know, my neighbour, my neighbours don't really know what I do, but my neighbour is a volunteer. It's difficult for volunteers. It's very difficult for grassroots football, I think, because it does rely an awful lot on willing dads and mums and all of that.
Yeah.
He's done this level one safeguarding for Sport England. You'd just as well stick it down the toilet, quite honestly, for all you learn. And I said to his wife or his son or something, I said, get your dad on one of my courses. I said, so what did you learn about it? I don't like all this stuff. He said, it's horrible. And I think, well, if you've got that attitude, are you actually going to do anything about it if you actually saw something? This still goes on. People say to me, oh, I don't want to do that. It's unpalatable. You know what? How do you think it feels for the child?
Yeah.
Unpalatable. Grow up. Grow up. Get a spine. Our responsibility is to look after and produce a healthy generation, not being lily-livered to go running down a dark hole going, no, I don't want to face that. You know, I would not push someone's child in the river and expect them to swim. I would not I wouldn't make them cross over the M6, you know, at 5 years old. As a parent, you're responsible about all those safety measures. Why, in God's name, do parents not want to understand how to prevent this hideous, life-changing harm on their child. I don't get it. During the lockdown last summer, we offered free courses, pumping it out on social media all day, every day, free courses. Your child may be at home. You think quiet while you're working from home. Both of you working from home. The child's on its iPad. You have diddly squat clue what they might be doing. Come on for 30 minutes on a free course. Do you know what? Not one parent signed up.
Is that right?
Not one.
And we know that abuse and grooming online is increasing exponentially year in, year out. This is where paedophiles operate.
Do you want me to make your hair fall out?
I don't have any. You can't do that, but go ahead.
Here we go then. Here we go. I get a lot of information from Internet Watch Foundation, who operates all around the world. I get a lot of information from Europol, right? Internet Watch Foundation, in October last year, they have 79 companies around the country that track who's trying to access child abuse images. And let me tell you, this is child abuse. I would throttle anyone that says child pornography. It's not pornography. Pornography is consensual between adults. Children can't consent. This is child abuse.
Well said.
Right?
Well said.
So 4 weeks, there's 30 days, September, April, June, November. So 31 days in October, right? So in 31 days, three companies out of the 79, so 76 that didn't send in a report, reported 8.8 million attempts to access child abuse images in the UK in 31 days.
8.8 million attempts to access images of children. Jesus.
Yeah. In the UK in 31 days. Now, that is horrendous.
Yeah, I'm... That's, yeah... That's absolutely astonishing. And of the 8.8 million, is there any clue as to how many individual people might have attempted to access the 8.8 million images? Do we know?
Well, I don't know.
It could be any number.
I think the last time I saw it, I think it was 300,000 to 400,000 people that they could see. But, you know, you just don't know. And, I mean, if anyone's listening, you know, a lot of the children are doing these self-generated images with the bedrooms up in their, you know, in the bedrooms with their devices or in the toilet. And they're doing sexual acts in front of the webcam. You would not, girls particularly, very, very high number, about 96% of girls that are doing this. And I keep saying to the parents, get these devices out their private areas. They wouldn't be doing this in the living room.
Hang on a second
now. It's a real problem.
Marilyn, hang on. Did you say 96? Where did you get that number from? 96% of girls.
They did. 96% of self-generated images online, which is doing stuff in front of your webcam,
girls.
Yeah, are girls taken in their bedroom or the bathroom, 8 years to 13-year-old girls.
Because somebody online is asking them to do it.
Yes, yes, yes. I don't understand it. They know it's live streaming. They know that they're talking to a stranger. So why, I don't know why they're doing it. Because what they do, the stranger then takes that footage and then off it drops into the dark web where it gets traded.
Where it gets traded. Let me ask you a couple of quick fire questions if you don't mind. I know these require more in-depth answers, but I'll ask you to be as quick as you can for two or three quick questions. Forget about Carl Beach for a minute. I've spoken to people over the years that knew about Edward Heath and the Morning Cloud yacht and Haute de la Garenne home. And I've spoken to some credible people who have believed for many years that a paedophile ring is operated out of Westminster. Do you believe that?
I think it's quite possible. I think Edward Heath was probably gay. I don't know... There was a lot that went on. Oh golly, what was the house called? Dolphin House, Dolphin Square. There was a lot of stuff going on there, and it wouldn't surprise me at all, because paedophiles work in circles. They don't work solitarily.
Yeah.
That's why I find it difficult with the FA when Sheldon has said what he said, because you don't, as I say, you're not going to put a pin notice board up going, oh, we've got a paedophile ring going on here.
Yeah.
You know, it just happens underground. I find it very difficult to believe with that number, 240 suspects, that there wasn't known in some form of circles.
Marilyn, do you remember when the BBC made a programme on Westminster back in 1997, Tim Fortescue, who was Edward Heath's chief whip, he said very nonchalantly that it was fairly common for MPs to come to the whips to get them out of trouble. He said it could be interfering with small boys. And he said that so blasé, as if it was such a done thing.
Like a throwaway remark.
Yes, and then he said, to make it worse, aren't we clever?
Yes. He, to me, he's third party to it.
He said we would get them out of trouble because then we would get brownie points. Didn't he?
I mean, Jimmy Savile, how many people knew Esther Anson. They're sitting there with her head in her hands. I was on a program with her, where she floods of tears. Oh, I didn't know. Well, what are you doing running Childline then? You know, I've got no patience with it whatsoever. People knew and they kept their mouth shut. And I knew before I even knew how my life was going to go when I was teaching. I knew that was wrong. Every level that was wrong. I would have gone and done something with it. I wouldn't have just stuck my head in the ground and turned a blind eye. But people don't want to get their hands dirty. They think it's infectious. You know, when I went, you know, I was all over the press when this guy who abused my kids went down, because then, you're going back 19 years, no one spoke about it, right? And he walked out of a Crown Court having said he was guilty with a £200 fine and a suspended sentence. Oh, not on my life, you're not, you know, over my dead body. And I managed on my own strength and letter writing to get him put down. We went to the High Court of Appeal, yeah, and had him put down. And, you know, that's where this journey started. I'd go back to my teaching years, then I would never have accepted. I would never have said, oh, I think something's odd, I'm not going to do about it. I'm telling you now, I've done something about it. I find it extraordinary that people can say, that was then. No, it was wrong then to ignore it as much as now. But my fear is with the FA that unless mandatory reporting, I have to say, why doesn't Westminster want mandatory reporting put in place? It's in America, it's in countries around Europe. Why don't they want it put in place? That to me stinks. Because, you know, mandatory reporting would make you legally liable
for anything that happens because of your not reporting.
And I'm certainly sure that the whips are still approached with stuff. I mean, this crime is at the top of society right the way down, the length and depth and breadth of it.
I'll never forget it.
It's a very toxic world that I work in. And, you know, I'd probably be far happier, like, doing my gardening and walking my dog, but I know it's making a difference. And if I can get, you know, messages out that I'm going to keep on doing this until I'm 6 foot under, because I'm never immune to the harm this causes. It could be your child tomorrow. It could be somebody's granddaughter tomorrow. And there's no point in thinking, you know, I don't want to listen to this. For all that person knows, they may not even know it's happened in their family.
Well, here's a question. Here's a question.
People don't report it.
Here's a very good question. We'll finish on this today. Folks, you're listening to Marilyn Hawes. I've known Marilyn for some years. First time we spoke, I was doing a radio gig in Spain, actually. That'll tell you how long
ago that we've been.
That's right. A lot of time for Marilyn. Do go to freedom-abuse.org. Freedom-abuse.org. Right, here's a question, then we'll finish on this. 5 minutes. I don't like the fact that the Board of Education in this country, or the Department of Education, has decided that it wants children as young as 5, 6 and 7 in primary school to be talking about graphic sex and graphic depictions of sex and talking about their gender and their gender identity and playing games where they discuss masturbation and stuff like that. The sort of thing that we never encountered until we went to high school. Now, based on what you've been telling me today and other days, that's going to be traumatic for children, surely.
I think it's incredibly traumatic for children, because even when I do think at some point that transgender and all this has to be discussed. Yeah, but at 5 years old, they should still be playing in the sandpit. I mean, my 8-year-old grandson would be mortified if he had that sort of education, because he's a proper little boy of 8 years old, and they're a proper, you know, brought up in a way that is, I think, appropriate for a 5-year-old, an 8-year-old, and a 2-year-old. And I think it is traumatic. I don't. What crazy person dreamt this up? They come out, you see, with these knee-jerk ideas without ever thinking about it. So, all right, 80% of mental health issues in this country stem from adverse childhood experiences, right? So, okay, yay, let's just chuck a few million into the mental health budget, shall we? Whoever gets it, it's always with Westminster, their little chums. They have a little boys' club of their favourite charities, you see, and you don't get a chance to get to the table. So, you know, people like me, we don't get any funding. We literally live on a wing and a prayer that somebody actually will stick some money in one day and make a donation. Do you know, I was on, who was I on? I was on Loose Women about 3 years ago, right? And 23,000 people came to my website and not one person donated a pound. I find that extraordinary, that lack of generosity. It could be your daughter, your child, your niece, your nephew, your neighbour. One in five adults have been sexually abused as children. You all work with someone. They're in your street. They're in your workplace. You know, this is, as I say, it is a pandemic and no one is putting billions of pounds to actually stem it back. Where's the vaccine for this? There's so much that could be done in the early years and parents before they actually give birth. You know, I've written a parenting course for different places of like called Giving Your Child Wings. Let's look at what might be a better way of doing things or not or whatever to try and get the best results we possibly can. So with it, I've got my parent of four and granny of six hat on and my deputy head hat on. I care with every bone in my body about the well-being of children. I really hurt when I know a child's been harmed, and I never get immune to it. They are our future, and if we don't help them have a healthier way forward, then we've done nothing with our oxygen. Every single government since I've done this in 20 years has failed children miserably and continue to do so because they don't want to have the very earthy, gritty conversation. It's so much easier to have it with the big charities that do as they're told.
Marilyn, we'll leave it there.
Sorry, I'm off one.
No, it's really good. Listen,
I'm hurt about what, I mean, I just would love to see more.
You're in the right place.
I'm going to do, because as I say, naive and dangerous. And if you're a parent listening to this, when you take your children to football or sport or swimming, stay with them. And Richie, you were absolutely right. For everybody's sake, don't go off to the Tesco shop because somebody suddenly sees that child's vulnerable. Ooh, mum's always late.
Yeah.
And they'll cozy the wrong sort of person, could be another father or mother, cozies up to them. Parents are also responsible to learn about this. You do not want to be me.
Powerful stuff, Marilyn. You answered your own question, I think, when you said, what sort of idiot would want to get children as young as five discussing graphic descriptions of sex?
I think it's wrong.
Well, do you know what? It's obviously someone or some group of people who want to sexualise children. But anyway, let me just give the website address again. It's freedom-abuse.org, freedom-abuse.org. You've been listening today to the founder and CEO of that very important group, Marilyn Hawes. Marilyn, thanks for coming back.
Thanks,
I know we'll pick
so
this
much.
Up again
Richie,
in the future.
You take care. Let's talk again because there's so much to discuss.
No
really.
Doubt about it. Thanks, Marilyn.
Thank you. You take care.
Bye for now.
Bye
now. Marilyn Hawes there, live on the line from her home, freedom-abuse.org. Yeah. What sort of idiot would want to get children speaking about masturbation, aged five? And what was that book we saw that was recommended for children? I can't remember. It was a book that was tabled. It was put out there as possibly being used in primary schools. And then you had the dice, didn't you? We saw the dice that they wanted seven-year-olds to use, and the dice had various acts of sex on each side. How many sides were on a dice? Six sides on a dice, and each side had a corresponding sexual act on it, and they wanted children to throw the dice and to talk about the possible ways that people could have intercourse and stuff, and you had anal and all sorts of mad stuff on there. Stuff that really shouldn't be considered by anybody until, I suppose, they're old enough to discuss or to think about those things. Playing in sandpits, she said, 5-year-olds. think she answered her own question there, didn't she? What sort of idiot thinks that's a good idea? Well, maybe the sort of idiot who wants to sexualise children or to stimulate children, younger and younger children, to think about these things, maybe. Maybe an agenda to deliberately traumatise children. I don't know. That's just me. Right, that's about it for the programme today. Thanks for all of your tweets on that. A lot of tweets came in. I appreciate them. I really do. I didn't read out too many of them when I was speaking with Marilyn. Mark says, Richie, my best mate's child had some homework based on Frankenstein. In this scenario, the guy had electrodes put on his head and in his anus, says Mark. And the homework question was, imagine if you were there, what would you feel? That is sick, says Mark. Is that right, Mark? That's astonishing. Are we talking about a high school aged child? Not saying that's okay now. Or a primary school going child? I'd like to know more about that. I mean, we don't have children. I think we'd still probably like to. I think so, even though we'd be old parents, wouldn't we? I suppose. But based on what's going on, neither myself nor my better half would ever send a child of ours to a primary school in this or any other country. He or she would be homeschooled by myself. I'd do me best. You know? Anyway, big shout to Carol Dobson, the leader of the Freedom Alliance Party. Shout out to Carol for coming on. Do go to freedomalliance.co.uk to learn more. freedomalliance.co.uk. And thanks very much to Marilyn Hawes. Again, freedom-abuse.org is the website. You and I will talk again tomorrow, Thursday, at 5 o'clock. In the meantime, enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. And if you're Irish, and if you're on GMT or CET, you might just be about having a tipple right about now. So enjoy your tipple. Enjoy the rest of your Paddy's Day. Speak tomorrow. Take care of yourselves. Bye now.